and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and what are we to make of feminism as Catholics? What are we to do about feminism as Catholics? One of the things I notice, you have probably noticed this as well, that within the Catholic Church, every possible response to feminism seems to be perfectly legitimate and present, some of them in large numbers. Everything from Jesus is the original feminist to Jesus is the source of the patriarchy. Everything from the church itself is a great feminist organization to feminism is the great enemy of the church. So what are we to make about all of that? And is there something that the Catholic Church has to offer to modern feminism? That's our discussion topic today, and we have a great guest for that. Philosopher Carrie Gress is our guest. Her doctorate is from the Catholic University of America, and she's the editor of the online magazine Theology of Home. Dr. Gress is a fellow of Washington, D.C.-based think tank, the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She's a scholar at the Institute for Human Ecology at Catholic University of America. And her latest book out in August from Regnery is The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Destroyed Us. Dr. Carrie Gress, thank you for being here with us.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be back with you.
Are you really doing all those things that I just said?
I'm doing all of those things. And homeschooling children, and it's running a store and a blog, and yeah, it's busy.
Well, I do a podcast, so we're basically the same. Basically the same. All right, so I read a bit of your book, and here's a thing that stands out to me. Mm-hmm. Do you really mean this? Feminism has left a trail of tears, misery, and confusion. Is that the truth about feminism?
Yes, it is.
Well, that's not good.
No, it's not good at all. So, I mean, it's really fascinating when you start digging into feminism and what was really there. You know, I didn't start doing this research on women and feminism to debunk it. I just wanted mm-hmm. to know what really happened and what all of that. And I've really concluded that it is actually the apparatus that has led to what we understand as the abortion industry in the world. And I think it's actually the deadliest ideology in all of human history. I think we have a very sugar-coated vision of it, largely because of the incredible marketing that has been done to promote it. But I think it's incredibly problematic.
It's funny that you say that, because I remember as a kid, I was born in 64. So in the 70s, when all the feminism it was called the Women's Lib movement and all that. Mm-hmm. And I remember my mother being very much against it. And as a child, why are you against it? It entirely had to do with abortion. That was her entire thing, was this is what they're selling. This is what they're pushing. This is what they want for women.
Yeah, no, and that's exactly right. I mean, this is what I discovered in my research, was that, you know, feminism started with the wrong question. They didn't start with, how do we help women as women? They started with a question of, how do we help women become like men? And so when you start with that question, you're going to end up with a wrong answer. And we can see this in spades. You know, you just look around. This is why we can't define what a woman is, because we've tried to take our fertility out of it and reject motherhood and all of its different ways in which it's expressed. But we also feminism has tried to make women sort of workers, you know, ideal workers. And there's a whole connection to socialism and communism that, you know, I dug up and have found and discovered. And they knew that they couldn't just come in and sort of arm wrestle us into that position the way that happened in the Soviet world, where women were made workers. So they had to use a lot of psychology and marketing and all those kinds of things. And this is kind of what we've ended up with, is this idea that we're meant for careers, and that's really the goal. And of course, in order to be a good worker, this is why we have to have abortion. So yeah, they're very much joined at the hip, those two issues.
I have to say, one thing you said, though, I wonder if it's true or what the evidence for it is, because I think most people assume it, and most even Catholics assume it is not true. And that is, its original idea was flawed. I think most people would say, no, if you go back to the, mm-hmm. you know, the suffragettes or the you know, the women's rights stuff from the 19th century, maybe even early 20th century, its original idea wasn't flawed. That's what they'll say.
Yeah. And that's what I thought. I mean, that's why I started going back to, I looked at the first wave and I thought, you know, I'm going to spend a couple of days on the first wave and just make sure I really understand it and maybe get some nice quotes from it for the book and then just sort of move back on to the second wave. And that's when I was just astounded at all of these issues. And, you know, I have to be very clear about what I mean when I say feminism. I think, you know, I wrote the book, The Anti-Mary Exposed, and in that there were sort of things that congealed, different ideas that congealed in the second wave. One of them was this idea of the occult being a really prevalent piece. The other idea is this idea of free love, or, you know, getting rid of monogamy, getting rid of the nuclear family. And then the third piece is what's well known now as smashing the patriarchy, but this idea of egalitarianism. So I thought all those were really new ideas. And this is what we hear over and over again, you know, that feminism was hijacked by this in the second wave. But I found all of those ideas in the first wave, actually articulated by a man, Percy Shelley, in I think early 1820s. All three of those ideas at work, and his he had a poem about this woman named Sithna, and talked about these elements of creating this idealized woman who didn't have a husband or children, and she was just free and, you know, in control of her own life. And that really became the model. But all of those elements of the egalitarianism was there, the free love idea was there, and the occult was definitely there in Percy Shelley. He pulled out, and he was actually the son-in-law of Mary Wollstonecraft. They didn't know each other because she died in childbirth with her daughter, Mary Godwin, who became Mary Godwin Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein. But there's just this really fascinating history that I dig into in my book, and just show, you know, these four people: Mary Wollstonecraft, her husband, William Godwin, Percy Shelley, and then of course, Mary Shelley, just the kind of damage that came out of those four people, and really it made the platform of feminism what it was in the 1820s. And then the way it was mimicked. And, you know, one of the things Shelley did too, that was really interesting, was he talked a lot about this idea of Eve being framed, you know, her Eve, Genesis 3 was really an opportunity for Eve, not a temptation or a fall. And that is all over the 19th century literature, that element of kind of going back to Genesis, rewriting Genesis, reorienting Eve to be a heroine instead of, you know, tempted and fallen. So yeah, all of this was at play, this very anti-Christian, free love, you know, crazy spiritualist stuff going on. I was shocked.
Right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. So because I do think there's many people who would say, look, the definition of feminism is equality for women. And is that the definition of feminism?
You see, that's a hard thing, is that you could use that definition and mean that, but then you run into all these other people, like, you know, the Kate Millets of the world and all Betty Friedans, you know, who are using it in much more politically fevered pitched leftist kind of way. And that's really when we see around us, you know, all these celebrity women are living out these three things. You know, the occult is there, the free love is there, and then this idea of smashing the patriarchy. Go to any women's event, and these things are going to be on the table. And I think the problem is again, we're sort of sugarcoating it by just saying it's equality for women. Women's equality has come from Christianity. I mean, that's the place from which it has come. And it certainly was in Christ and it's scriptural. We also see it in the development of interest in the Blessed Virgin Mary. We see it in female saints. But I think what feminism, again, has done is it has stripped us of our fundamental identity, which is motherhood. And I don't just mean that in terms of biological or adoptive parenting. I mean that in terms of a broader way in which, you know, women are psychologically mothers, they spiritually mother other people. This is a more general concept. And that's really what's been taken away from us. And you can see it too. I mean, it's really interesting to even just compare it to the church as a mother. You know, we understand that as an icon of Christianity. The, you know, St. Peter's Square is such a great example of that, the embrace of the arms of St. Peter's. And what happens in a church, you know, we're nourished, we're sheltered, it's a sanctuary, it's comforting, all these things that happen in a home, happen in a church as well, and presumably happen in heaven as well. So the fact that we've sort of stripped that from womanhood and negated it, you know, sort of erased the fertility of a woman, you know, creates all kinds of havoc in, among Christians as well. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why Christians and Catholic women are contracepting and aborting their children at almost the exact same rates as regular culture. So yes, it would be lovely if we could just say feminism was this very simple, superficial, shallow concept that was just there to help women. But when you really look at the ideology and the way that it's developed and been formed over the years, it's just really dark and been very, really deformed us and really deformed the church, really destroyed the family, I think, as well. And this is one of the reasons why women are so unhappy. You know, feminism hasn't made women happier. It's made us less happy because of the fact that we're operating off of this idea that we can, something that goes against our human nature is going to make us happy. And you can't, you're never going to find your ultimate fulfillment in a job. Women are made for community. We're made for rich relationships. We're made for this kind of mothering that we do on a general scale. And when you take that away from women, we're going to find surrogates. We're going to, you know, pets are suddenly going to become our children. And we are going to find a way to express that desire to love others in this very uniquely female way.
So if feminism, the ism of feminism, not speaking of it as, like you said, some kind of shallow, look, almost a greeting card version of men and women are equal, right. Which is actually, as you said, quite a profound thing that if you asked an ancient Roman or an ancient Persian, if that was the case, they would have laughed at you. It was Christianity that introduced that idea. And I challenge anybody to prove otherwise, because that is the fact. That's what happened. Yeah. But if we say that feminism, no, is one of the isms of kind of the post-industrial age, and as such has a very dark side, just as fascism or Marxism or the other isms of the capitalism, they have their dark side. Yeah. Can we say though that the Catholic Church might, in its relationship with, you know, with the world, it doesn't just hate the world. It doesn't just reject the world. It's constantly trying to call people back to a truly human vision. And that human vision must include God. Can we fix this thing? Can we fix this feminism that we've been, that now is just a fact all around us?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I've come down on the side of the fact that I think it's too big. I think it's too deadly. I think it's deformed us too much. And I think this is the beauty of Catholicism, is we have actually a proper and ordered response to it. We have all these amazing women. We have all this incredible writing about womanhood over the centuries. We have the example of all these saints who, female saints who, you know, none of whom look exactly the same. They just have these incredibly unique vocations. And we know that happens in, you know, the holier we get, the sort of more unique our, the call comes and gifts are within the framework of virtues. But I think one of the objections I hear a lot, and actually someone just wrote this in print, you know, sort of suggesting that maybe I'm not sufficiently Catholic because I'm questioning John Paul II's call for a new feminism. I think the problem is people have overstated what it was that John Paul II was asking for. If you look at his encyclicals, the word new feminism is used once in Evangelium Vitae. And he calls for a new feminism, which of course suggests that there's an old feminism, that there's something that we ought to reject. And I don't think that we have done that properly. I think we have just tried to sort of sugarcoat it and say, oh, we just need to be pro-life, without really recognizing the rot that's there, that's connected. It is really connected to Marxism and is really connected to the occult. So I think that's important. I think the other thing that's fascinating to me too is he's got this beautiful document, Moliere's Dignitatum. Feminism isn't used once in that whole document. So I think it's overstated than people think that we have to have this sort of Catholic feminism. And I think it feels very shallow and superficial. And I know that there are women who have done deeper work on the academic level. And I think that's challenging because a lot of times it's very inaccessible. Most people are not going to pick that up and read it cover to cover. And this is one of the reasons why I've written my books in the way that they're written, so that they're highly readable. And don't get too deep into the philosophical weeds. But I think a lot of people that are writing on a more popular scale are probably not formed sufficiently to see what the problems are. They're sort of sugarcoating them. I heard a recent woman say a couple of years ago that she thought that Pope Benedict was a feminist. And just like, no, Pope Benedict was not a feminist. And again, I think she meant this sort of superficial, he believes in the equal dignity of woman. But that's not really what feminism is. And so I think we just have to be very careful about what we mean. So if you read somebody talking about feminism, make sure that they're defining their terms and are very explicit about it. But I think it's really challenging to see a way forward and to keep that name because of the fact that it's so connected with the secular culture and
right.
with this incredible amount of death and destruction.
Okay, so in other words, we have to offer an alternative, not a reinterpretation, but to be quite clear that this is an alternative view.
Yeah.
One of the wonderful things, at least in my experience, of the Catholic Church, of Catholic life, of the Catholic way of thinking, is that it's very resistant to dividing people up into groups and classes and, the working class against the wealthy class or men against women and all that. So would the Catholic response, the Catholic kind of way forward out of a world that has been poisoned by all these isms, have to include something that can bring men and women together again rather than just be about women?
Yeah, I think that that's a great way to look at it. And obviously, the family is really a huge part of that. And that's one of the things that I've seen too about feminism is men are really reticent to talk about feminism. They feel like it's an argument they're never going to win. I can't tell you how many emails I've gotten from men saying, thank you for saying this, or several have sent me actually a bunch of research that they've done on feminism that they knew they could never get published anywhere, that as a man, they just couldn't publish this kind of thing. And I think that it's just amazing how successful that accusation of sexism, how effective that's been in silencing men, good men that are thoughtful, that want to heal a rift, that want to see, the family restored and this kind of thing. And they're just incredibly silenced. So I think that's something that is really important, is to get back to this place where we can actually have a real discussion about it instead of just sort of mudslinging or making it about sexism or making it, kind of taboo topics like men can't talk about women, but somehow women can talk about men. It's sort of this bizarre double standard that's in the culture. And I think the other thing, feminism at heart, it makes women this kind of victim. And we are automatically victims because we're women, and men are automatically the oppressors because they're men. And I think that that's where a lot of its danger and potency comes from. And that's just not any way in which people can live and thrive and actually like live in relationship with one another too. So I think that's a fundamental problem. But yeah, we've got just, again, there's a lot of really beautiful work about women that has been written over the ages, and a lot of it's being kind of ignored, or it needs to be kind of presented in a way that's more readable. But it's certainly out there. And I think it's an encouraging area. I meet a lot of young women who are looking for, topics for thesis topics, or that, dissertation topics and things like that, that are interested in writing on this kind of thing. So I'm not the only one out there anymore that's writing on this. So that's heartening to see, but, I think this is just the beauty of the church, is to see the incredible gifts that there are in the complementarity of man and woman, and pressing into that, in that dynamic, that relationship that exists, instead of, continually living with this wedge between men and women.
I want to ask for your help or your insight in one area of this, and that is that in the Catholic kind of world of social communication, blogging, podcasting that you see out there, there are certain men who are very anti-feminism, mm-hmm. but seem to me to be doing it in an almost little boyish way of denigrating women, mm-hmm. of treating the idea of wives be submissive to your husbands as some kind of invitation to treat women as less than. Do you see what I'm saying? That there,
yeah.
and it seems to me like I don't want to do a conversation with you about this that provides any fuel to that.
Yeah.
Very, it really just seems so adolescent and stupid.
Yeah.
Thing that's going on out there.
Yeah, no, and I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, I think that the people that are doing that, there's something interiorly that's broken or wrong and off, and a lot of it, because it comes about power. I mean, feminism is ultimately about power and control, and I think the reaction in that respect is also about power and control. It's not about authentic love, charity, respect. And this has been one of the greatest things I never dreamed I would see in terms of my book, is just that men, I think rightfully, have built up a lot of resentment towards women. And I'm not saying these men are necessarily, this could be some of it, but I think there's a bigger issue at play that's their own brokenness that is a different thing. But I spoke at Georgetown University a couple of years, and I remember in the room, there were these two young men in the back corner, and they were sort of asking me a question that was, I don't remember exactly what the question was, but it was something to the fact that they were trying to get me to sort of really be hard on women in a bad way. And I remember just saying, you know, the reality is most women didn't choose this. This has been in the water. We've been indoctrinated to this since the day that we were born, the sense of, I got to compete with the guys and I've got to be one of them and I've got to be powerful and strong and, you know, all this stuff that we keep hearing. And we didn't choose this. And I think that when that, you know, it's just fascinating to watch their body language go from, you know, really hostile almost and kind of a caricature of themselves to sort of like a relaxed compassion. Like they suddenly were like, oh, like, you know, the bitterness that they had towards these women in their lives that they resented because of the way that they were treating them. There was suddenly the sense of, they didn't choose this. This isn't something they didn't want. They probably weren't born. They were indoctrinated into this. I think that that's a really important piece that men have to be aware of, is just how deep this indoctrination has been on the lives of women and the kind of confusion about how it is that we ought to live our lives. You know, I remember being probably like in sixth or seventh grade, and I had this girl, this woman babysitting me. She was a teenager. And I remember her saying to me, you know, we're walking through the mall. I remember it so vividly. And she said, you know, all is fair in love and war. And I thought, that makes a lot of sense. And I just really...
Oh, that's scary.
It is. And it was one of those things that it took me a really long time, even in my relationships with my dear friends, you know, to sort of see, you know, a lot of processing of that as a young girl. And I think with that, right. And then also being told, you know, you have to be independent and take care of yourself. I mean, all of those kinds of very subtle things just are deeply in the culture. And so, yeah, I think we have to parse out good men who are authentically trying to help women and navigate this versus those who are sort of using the cudgel of, you know, be submissive in a really unhealthy and disordered way. And we it's sad because it's certainly there in the secular culture, but the fact that we're seeing it in the Catholic culture is really disappointing.
Well, I mean, there are biblical texts that can be kind of almost proof texts for a kind of Jesus wants me to boss women around attitude.
Yeah. And that just shows somebody who's who doesn't understand what it really means to love someone and pour oneself out for them and charity and all of that. So, yeah.
Exactly. So this way you speak about, you know, people, their own wounds, their own difficulties, their own hurts, then mm-hmm. This is actually part of your analysis of feminism as well, is that when you talk about these men who want to boss women around, well, there's something happened to you that makes you want to boss women around. But when you get into these women who are many of whom are very well-known, much lauded names, these women actually had terrible hurts at the hands of men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at the hands of women as well. Yeah. This was a fascinating thing, was just to start looking at, you know, broken people break other people. And a lot of the response across the board, you know, starting with Mary Wollstonecraft, is that these are incredibly broken people who have not had modeled to them what authentic love is. And, you know, Mary Wollstonecraft had these horrible parents. Her father was a drunk and abused his wife and hung the family dog. I mean, awful things. And she just never had the example of what it actually looked like to really love someone well. And this was that pattern that emerged, was all these women had some kind of brokenness. And instead of saying, let's go back to the Christian model, they all went to this, let's get rid of the model. Let's move in this direction that gets rid of it entirely. And we can see that happening in our own day very dramatically. You know, rather than saying, let's go back to something like the Ten Commandments, you know, it's more, let's throw this all out and just sort of exist in this realm where moral laws and human nature don't exist. And so that's kind of the saddest thing, is just how these broken people have fundamentally formed who it is that so many of us have become in the culture because of these very bad ideas, these very broken relationships that they were in, and just the way in which they were taught to respond themselves. So yeah, it's incredibly amazing to see how deep the sins are. And a lot of them aren't their own sins. They're sins of, you know, the generations before them and around them.
And they, in some, they convince the world to, especially the women of the world, generations and generations of women, to seek to liberate themselves from that which truly liberates. Mm-hmm. That is, to seek to free themselves from the one who offers freedom as a free gift.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, it's very hugely anti-Christian. Elizabeth Cady Stanton was very much worked hard, you know, this is in the 1880s, 1890s, to separate Christianity from the women's movement, to try. And she had this book called The Women's Bible that you can still buy. And it's she and a number of women made commentaries about scripture. And, you know, it's sort of reading it, it reminds you of like an angry teenager, you know, sort of anytime a man is mentioned, it's, you know, it's just very superficial. But it just, it had some serious reach and in terms of what the belief that Christianity was bad and confining and all of that. And instead, she, you know, she's grasping at spirit tables and seances and that, you know, the spiritual world for advice instead of really fundamentally Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Carrie Gress is our guest, and her latest book is The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Just came out August of last year. You can get it from Regnery. Do get it. This is, we're always so delighted when you're here. I feel like I've missed you. And I think we've missed you for a good reason. Didn't you kind of step back from a lot of the public stuff because there were people who needed you?
Yeah. I had another baby, and it, you know, it's just really hard to do podcasts when you've got 1, 2-year-old, 3-year-old around, you know, with no one to rein them in. So yeah, I stepped back a lot from that, but and it's great to be back. I appreciate you tackling this. I mean, it's such a heavy topic, but I think, you know, this is one of the things I tried to do with the book, was just really, especially at the end, give people hope and really a beautiful and renewed sense of what womanhood can look like, and the beauty and the joy that are connected with it too.
Well, it does give me hope, the work that you've been doing, which is recovering. It does seem to me that it's in very much your career is a career of recovery. Recover those things that actually bring life so that we can kind of heal people in this culture, which is just killing, which is a culture of killing.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. And I think, you know, I've been really inspired by work of other people, not necessarily Catholics. There's a woman named Erica Commissar who's done all this work on how women have lost this instinct for empathy for their children. And as soon as I heard that line, I was like, yes, that's exactly what we've lost. We've made ourselves sort of the center of attention and really lost a sense of the importance of raising them empathetically. And a lot of that, again, is we're sort of competing for goods, and that the children just sort of become an additional competition in our lives. And, you know, it's those kinds of things that's what's led to just the incredible sadness that so many women live with and are, you know, missing in their lives. So yeah, and I think it can be done joyfully and beautifully. And this has also been obviously the goal of Theology of Home too, to really start helping women understand what it looks like to live in a in this world where you are happily married, or you are happy to be a mother, or you are, you know, instead of resenting these things and or trying to cut them out of your life entirely. And we haven't seen it in 50 years. Nobody said anything good about motherhood really for 50 years. So there's a lot there. I think there's a lot of potential, and I think a lot of people are waking up to it now and seeing, you know, the scales are sort of falling off of people's eyes. So it's been really heartening in that respect.
I think they are falling off, but I think they're also being peeled back by some very smart and helpful people, and you are one of them. Dr. Carrie Grass, thank you very much for the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Check out the book, The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Thank you for being here with us, for spending the time. We appreciate that you do that. We appreciate also that wherever you get this podcast, you give it those 5 stars and maybe a few nice words. That helps to grow the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, maybe about this episode, maybe you have an idea for a future episode, for whatever reason, if you want to get in touch with us, just send us an email. focus@catholic.com is our email address. focus@catholic.com. That'll do it for this one. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Focus.